When last we met, our intrepid adventurers, we were wrapping up on a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, a Disney family classic that Seth likes a lot more than I think Dan and I like it, but it's still fun, movie. And then
I think it's going to level out this week.
We had discussed briefly that Seth was unhappy with the sequel. And so, of course, we're here to talk about the sequel. Basically, just Seth's criticisms that only he has, because I think I speak for Dan when I say that this is a perfect movie and we don't have to really say anything. We just leave it all up to Seth.
Yeah, like you framed it even before you went into the obvious joke territory of you actually liking Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. I enjoy that you did frame it as like I had personal beef with this film, like they destroyed everything I loved about what now is apparently being painted as one of my favorite films of all time, Honey, We Shrunk the Kids.
Was that your yellow convertible that they shrunk at the end and you're still bitter about it?
Yeah, with some dumb kid in it. And Carrie Russell. Wait, is that the same one I'm thinking of? I didn't get that far on the rewatch tonight.
yes, that's the one.
Yeah, with a weird, creepy, sexual overtones that made me uncomfortable. It was my car.
Mm. Mm. Well,
I'm sitting in it right now.
Got a decent internet connection in there.
Yeah. I don't know what to say to that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, do you
yes,
think you, if you,
you
were
yes, and.
If you were shrunk, would you have better or worse Wi-Fi connectivity?
It's all about, well, we talked about time dilation. Now let's talk about
radio frequencies.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no input on that particular topic, but we could talk about the movie. I watched the movie.
So Dan, what did you think of the movie, since you have voiced no strong opinions so far, one way or the other?
I thought the movie was as perfectly serviceable to the storyline as the first one was.
Really?
I mean, it's a quirky family fun movie where people get smaller and or big. I mean, it felt longer. I will say that this one felt longer than the first one, even though it is not. It is exactly the same length. But you know, you still got your quirky Zelensky. You have a little bit more of a you've got your '90s bad guy with way too much gel in his hair at the tennis club. But
John Shea.
You know, you gotta ramp it up. You throw in some more characters. You need some bad guys. Although he was a fine bad guy, the mustachy bad guy who had a very unusual late night dinner with him at the office was definitely out of place.
with their cloches.
And then just left.
Yeah.
And then he just leaves. He's like, you know, I'm thinking we could do bad guy stuff whenever it's time. And then he just walks out. Like, was he done eating? Did they have like other stuff to talk about or do?
He like just sat down and he was like picking up his fork and his knife, like, I'm gonna dig into this baked potato, and then he throws down his napkin in disgust and he's like, all right, later.
And they're like, we could plan an overthrow of this, and then walks out without planning the overthrow. Like bad guys. Like,
I'm completely off my appetite since you took a phone call during dinner.
Exactly. Not efficient in any way.
Yeah. And his only other scene is when he meets with John Shea briefly, and the guy is somehow too busy, but he's like, don't worry, the board's going to back you no matter what. I can't be here right now. I got to go. And it's like, okay, well, that's a little strange, but you know, he's kind of inconsequential. It's really just John Shea who's the bad guy, and it's kind of predictable for him since he would go on to do, it was Lex Luthor in The Adventures of, Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. The Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher show.
Yeah.
The only Superman I recognize.
Yeah. Yeah, release the Snyder cut of that.
Oh jeez.
Oh sorry. Hang on. I'm not gonna let us blow over the Snyder cut of Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. I just wanna take that in real quick. Like, I like that the Snyder cut people are now just like claiming all Superman entities, and then they're going to move outside of that and just Snyder cut everything. That's the future now, is going to be the Snyder cut of of Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
What is he going to do? Is he just going to go turn the contrast and saturation up on everything and be like, boom, it's perfect?
Way more headshots, like way more people getting shot in the head, point blank. Way more, which I thought the film needed. And
buildings falling down in the background, yeah. People screaming.
Lots of mass deaths in slow motion. I'm sorry, we can move on. I just didn't.
Entirely CG fights where you just have an actor's face sort of like pasted in there somewhere. And then you feel like you're seeing something that was on a video game console because time nor resources were not spent on this. And then it gets in slow motion, so you can really take it all in.
Are we still talking about Superman, or are we back
in tight shirts?
I Blew Up the Kids.
Really tight shirts and men's chests with those faces on them. And wet hair. A lot of wet hair.
I'm so lost. Which movie are we talking about?
all of them now. This is the Snyder cut of all films.
Yeah. It's just like the DC Dark Universe Bible or something, just like wet hair, tight shirts and stuff like that in there.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Release the Snyder cut of Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Oh, God. The Snyder cut should be a hairstyle for sure, right?
Oh, my God.
You should go into a place and ask for a Snyder cut.
Yeah, it makes you... Yep. Mm-hmm. It's just wet. It's like hair that is curled up from being wet. Yeah, and it weirdly makes your shirt tighter.
So this movie starts with the old school Walt Disney Pictures logo, which is kind of nice to see every now and then, because sometimes you watch stuff and they bothered to replace it with the new like train castle CG thing, Tinkerbell thing, and it's nice to see the old thing vibrating around the screen, flickering, and you get the animated sequence, which is much more mid-90s. You get to have all the sort of squiggly, puffy animated things going around the screen.
It looked like every book that was read to me in elementary school, which I actually kind of liked. I liked how dated, like you said, like placed it directly in the 90s, that opening sequence. And it felt like the kind of opening sequence you would get on even like a raunchy comedy even or something. Like it's like everything had that kind of intro for like 3 years.
It's kind of like a Shel Silverstein, like The Giving Tree is what it kind of reminded me of. But it did go on for a very long time.
Just less devastating.
It was tearing a family apart. The baby was so large.
Yeah. And we get the Zelenskys and they have their weird mailbox. But this time they're in Vista Del Mar,
a real town,
Nevada.
In a real street. Wait, now hang on. Was that Encino? Where was that? I knew this.
Where it was filmed?
Yes, I actually knew this. I looked it up, and
was it Orlando?
part? See, I thought it was in it was not in Orlando.
Is it Simi Valley? Because
they got suburbs
up there.
It is Simi Valley because I thought it was in what's ET Country up there? Where ET Park is. Shoot.
Is there Would you a like place to phone a friend?
ET Park?
ET Park? Yeah, man. Hold on a second. Hold on. It's going to come back to me. This is what the podcast listeners want, is me making you guys, me pausing the show.
Porter Ranch?
Porter Ranch, yes.
I've never heard of that before.
So it's not really, well, that was a famous gas leak there a couple years ago. Also, it was recently on fire.
And they're literally renaming, so we went to this park all the, yes, famous gas leak, you're absolutely right.
Is that a fart joke?
No, literal.
It's a horribly dangerous thing. It's a terrible thing. Porter Ranch Park, or that's not the name of it, but it's a park in Porter Ranch, and I forget the name of it. But apparently, I'm finding an article where they're now, as recent as July 10th, 2019, they are considering renaming it ET Park, which is what our family called it. It's got the caterpillar there.
Are they going to rename it ET Park, brought to you by Xfinity?
I hope. I think it just sounds better.
It was a good commercial.
It was a cute commercial. No. It was very cute the first time. Then when you watched it the second time, you were like, oh no, this is bad that this happened.
It still wasn't as bad as that Ferris Bueller, what was it, Pepsi thing they did at the Super Bowl a couple years ago?
Sure. I mean, I'm willing to believe that.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, I do, but I have no feelings about it.
You have no feelings about Ferris Bueller.
No, I do. I definitely don't have as many feelings about Ferris Bueller as I do for E.T. I have deep feelings for E.T.
Oh, you totally just disappeared for like 20 seconds. I have no idea what you said.
Yeah.
Well, you'll hear it on the on the recorded podcast. It was filthy.
I choose to believe that you had no actual defense of your remarks, so you just clammed up for 20 seconds and pretended Skype.
This actually happened a lot on the last week. I would like be going off on tangents, and then it would come back in, and you guys would be talking, and I'd be like, "Oh, I don't know when they thought I stopped talking. Let's hope that it was at a conversationally not awkward place."
We're so good at being not awkward.
It's our brand.
Man, what was the point of all this? Simi Valley. Wow. Yeah, good Simi God. Valley. Sorry. Simi Valley. It's in the game The Sims.
What part of this was filmed in Orlando, though? Because there is a location credit for Orlando in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In the credits for the movie.
I know of a couple shots in Las Vegas, which seems so ridiculous, but I think it's all... I couldn't... No, it's coming back to me. I remember rewatching this a couple weeks ago with my kids and being like, why are they in Vegas? That they were in California before. Like, this seems like a lot of extra work. And then when it gets to the third act, it's like, oh, this is why. It makes sense. They needed a... Plus, it was a spec. Now, did I lose you guys again? Or
No, we're still
just let me ramble.
Yeah, we were just listening and absorbing the information.
What about the laser lab? Could that be like a piece of like Disney World or something where they shot in Orlando?
Why would they need to go to Disney World for the laser lab? That's the subtitle of the episode, by the way, because I never said that sentence before.
No, I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't really matter what part was Orlando or not. But the Vegas is certainly an interesting thing to pick. And Vista Del Mar, Nevada is also interesting because it's a different setting. We're not in a parking lot in Mexico City with a couple of facades of houses. The scale of this is substantially increased to go with the scale of the baby, because did not have a big location to go to. And I think Vegas is pretty showy as locations go.
No, I actually, you're right. I get it. You get a giant guitar, you get all the giant neon. Like, it makes total sense. I think that we talk about it like it was a conscious choice. I think it was probably left over from... We briefly talked about this last week. I don't know if it was in the recorded part.
Yeah. Big Baby.
Big Baby is the spec script, yeah. And they... it makes so much more sense. And so I think that the Vegas part was probably native to Big Baby. And... committed to it. All that said, it still feels weird for them just to open in Vegas and then still be shooting in California until you get to the end and you understand why. But
yeah, I don't mind the setup that he's become successful, so he's moved to this brand new house in the suburbs over here by this new lab who's purchased the rights to his equipment, and he's continuing his research with them. And I think they make smarmy John Shea, bad guy person, really work with that angle, because it gives Moranis something to play off of, because now his character has an arc of, believing in himself over the course of the film, and trying to prove that he's actually the inventor that John Shea insists that he is not, because he doesn't have the credentials.
He also doesn't have a tie with a very tight knot at the top.
Yes. And he also doesn't have a van with a consistent battery driving thing, because he's late because it was overcast. And later on, they use the battery basically the movie.
You
want to start right now and talk about the convenient absence and then reappearance of technology throughout the movie? You talked about it last time a little bit, how they're struggling to figure out how to make Zelensky's shrinking laser make stuff bigger, but it did that in the last movie. And then also in this movie, like you pointed out, his solar-powered van was late because of clouds, or maybe he's just using that as an excuse. But then also later it has a battery, 24 or 48 volts. Is that what the two options were? And she accidentally puts it into high battery mode, which I don't know. Is that like, is that the Tesla ludicrous mode or something? And then it goes backwards very fast.
Yeah, it just speeds up the camera.
Sure.
But, yeah. You know, the movie, you know, gives you the weird suburb thing. We also are introduced to Adam, who is the baby for this movie, who was not in the previous movie. And as Seth pointed out, if you think about the timetable, this baby would not be this age at this point.
It lines up with what they say, the amount of time that has passed. Apparently it takes place 3 years after, and Adam is, what, two?
Mm. They celebrated making the kids the right size again a little.
Immediately. That's what I was thinking. That baby was conceived that Thanksgiving night. Or
they all had a little
whatever.
Too much turkey. And, the gave thanks.
Mm. Yeah.
I will say that the twins that play the baby, watching it with my kids, the baby is a funny, you get funny baby moments in the, and it's in the way that you get funny baby moments from like America's Funniest Videos. But the baby is actually rather charming baby in the way that, I say baby, it's a kid, like in the way that most kids are charming. It still feels weird. Like I know that no one is like, God, my beloved Honey, I Shrunk the Kids characters. But it feels very weird to have this baby suddenly there and the daughter just cast out because they couldn't figure out what to do with her.
You feel like it was a platoon of soldiers that went through some tough times in the first movie together, and they really created a bond. And in the second movie, they violated that by breaking them apart and then adding somebody new.
Well, she didn't even... She didn't even say goodbye to her baby brother. Like, she just gets in the cab and is like, I'm just going to college, y'all. You're going to regret taking me, parents, stupid parents. Parents never take their kids to college. And then she just leaves and she's gone. And, like, she's like a major character in the original. And I feel like there was more to be mined, possibly. You're already, and I'm going to do this. But they're already playing this whole dynamic of like Nick being annoyed by his baby brother because he keeps stepping on his guitars. And
who hasn't been there?
I know, right? And like you end up with these scenes in the end where Nick is stuck in trapped in this tiny car with Carrie Russell. And there's supposed to be some kind of like sexual chemistry between the two of them, which is a weird thing to say. And there's really not, because Carrie Russell's not allowed to talk very much. And it just feels like, why don't you just replace her and let the sister and Nick be both sick of this baby and dealing with this baby, like having this other kid in their family. Let this other kid be upstaging, like the kid is upstaging Amy. I keep saying Amy, that's her name, right?
Amy is the other kid, and also the actress's name was also Amy. Interesting.
Well, like she upstages her going off to college, like, and then this baby ends up blowing up, be huge, and upstaging literally everything. Like, I feel like there's all this thematic opportunity to keep her as a part of the story, and have her and Nick bond and bond with this baby, like make it about this family. But you immediately like jettison off one of the family members and. I don't know, it's just weird, man.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I don't miss Amy because I never liked Amy.
Rude.
As she was written in the first film. She was awfully shrill and weird, and not the way her character would say and do things did not seem natural to someone her age and her motivations to go to the mall, even if
she didn't want to go to the mall. She was trying to find a boy.
Yeah, but he was at the mall. But I think part of the problem with this one is you are also still dealing with men writing the movie. They're different men, but they're men writing the movie, and
men who love Wayne Newton.
Yeah.
And problematic Godzilla references.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Hey, even Spielberg's done that. We've all done it.
Oh, sure. No.
I haven't. I'm perfect.
Okay. Well, Nick is a teenage boy becoming a teenage man, and he needed room for his character arc, so they had to jettison the female character.
It was such a strong arc, too, especially the way Rick Moranis kept aggressively bringing up the birds and the bees and didn't give up and eventually had the conversation with his child. They set it up, and it definitely paid off.
Mm-hmm.
You're so resentful.
Yeah, I am. It's so weird. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's just weird.
I think I don't mind it as much because it doesn't seem any less... organic than the first film, because I didn't think that felt organic. So the way that things flow here is strange and not particularly well balanced in any good, meaningful way, especially for the characters who are portrayed by women, because the mom is the strongest female character in this movie, and I think a lot of that probably had to do with the fact that she may have pushed or insisted, because since in the last movie, she basically does nothing.
She was very tall, so she was very strong as a result.
Yeah, but this is a situation sort of like with Home Alone 2, where all of a sudden Catherine O'Hara is just like going through the streets of New York finding her son, because she obviously wouldn't still be an idiot.
Serve any purpose besides being a mother? That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not how I feel. That's what I feel is the perspective of the writers here. Like, I don't know how to write a woman, but in this, she's a mother to a baby. I can write that.
Yeah.
Would you have preferred, like, they cut to whatever college Amy was at, and she just, like, catches the news on whatever TV is in the dining hall and goes, oh, God, that's my gigantic baby brother?
I would have preferred her presence in the film serve a thematic and emotional purpose to the larger story.
Okay, writer, director, boy.
Yeah, listen. Yeah, I hold Honey, I Blew Up the Kid to the same standards that I hold Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I don't think that's true.
And the whole thing, it feels very much like everything I hate, it feels like it's left over from a spec script. Like, it feels not, and this is where I'm getting at. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is not an original movie, but the things I don't like about Honey, I Blew Up the Kid are they feel foreign and not organic to the... Maybe organic is the right word, but they don't feel like the voice of the first one. The first one is not perfect, but it did kind of... It's not as cynical as this one is. The things in this one, like John Shea's character, the stupid Wayne Newton joke, little things like that, like, are really... They feel cynical to me. They feel written by... I can see... The middle-aged white men, and this isn't being very judgmental, but the middle-aged white men sitting in the room together being like, oh, like, and in this town, babe, no one's bigger than Wayne Newton. And they're like, no one actually thinks it's funny, but they all want to keep their job. Even the person pitching it doesn't think it's funny. He just wants to keep his job. That's what that joke feels like. And that's what a lot of things in this movie feel like to me. And it makes me sad because I feel like there's enough stuff there to actually create a bare minimum organic story that is about its characters, and it's not perfect, but isn't this. I don't know. I'm holding it to way too high standards, but you're right.
No, it does feel like they took a spec script and they're like, all right, change the characters to Zelinsky's, and while we're here, can we do a couple more things to make this a little better, rather than taking the buying the concept and saying, all right, how do we make a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but bigger?
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't have that same sort of, like, weird campy vibe that popped up from time to time in the first movie. Like, the neighbor parents' characters and stuff like that are not felt in this one. I mean, you've got your quirky nosy neighbors, whatever. Julia Sweeney's there, like, making faces and stuff, but that's not really the same thing.
Did she die? She fainted and fell in a pool. Like, and nobody tried to rescue her. They all ran. Like... we were very concerned for her watching that in the Whirly House.
Oh. I wasn't that
not so
concerned.
Much in the Rosensteel House.
But, it's not as, it's certainly not as quirky. And I think there are definitely those moments where it feels more like a more like a 90s kids live action movie that doesn't have the sort of bizarre qualities. The things I said were sort of Joe Dante-esque in the last one, only not as, you know, mean and stuff. But this one doesn't have like that sort of thing. It's just sort of like, uh-oh, huge baby, ice cream on the truck, eats the thing. Playpen, can't stay in the playpen. Don't say nap. And so you get kind of like, it feels more straightforward. It doesn't feel like they're trying to like throw you a cutesy little wink or nod or anything like that. You don't have like a sort of Harryhausen weird ant fight versus scorpion thing.
How is that a bad thing? Like, you just said a Harryhausen, like, you evoked the name of Ray Harryhausen as if it were a negative thing, which
no,
I get. It's,
no,
I get
no,
why, but
I was saying this movie lacks that. It doesn't have the camp. This is much more
straightforward. Oh, you're back in my good graces.
Because, like, this movie, like, its effects and everything that's happening, it's very, very straightforward and very literal about what's going on. There's no... it doesn't really have the whimsy, with the exception of a couple of oversized props, I guess. But it's
not... Yeah, I was
going
to say, there was a lot of... Like, you know, it's not meant to be the point of it, but I thought I had a lot of fun with the way they shot the, you know, the tiny house around the baby, and then the giant man in the baby outfit. Like, the way they interact...
that stuff's really fun.
That's fun to, like, look at, but that's not really the point of the whole thing.
Especially there's that the whip pans back and forth between the two doorways. That all that stuff, I felt like that section was actually the most fun, and that's the section where, like, my kids enjoyed the most, and like I enjoyed. To me, like, really good family entertainment is stuff that, like, I'm not miserable watching with my kids, and the best is the stuff that, like, I want to watch as much, if not more, than my kids want to watch. This never reaches that by any means, obviously, but like that section was like the most. It was the most balanced in terms of how much everyone in the room was enjoying it. And for me, I was enjoying watching, like, how, like, and it's not hard for those of us who, like, either do this for a living or obsess about it for fun. Like, it's not hard to watch it and pick apart, like, how they're doing each of the tricks. But it is fun. It's from that time period where it is fun to, like, to ask yourself, like, what were they working with? What did they have to work with? And then, and you pretty quickly realize that is definitely a man wearing weird baby hands.
and that very giant big, head with the curly hair.
Yeah, but he masters the walk, though.
Yeah.
Like, he masters the baby walk, the weird toddle, fairly well. The stuff, there was a couple places where I couldn't quite, commit in my head to, like, my theory and how it was being done. And it's like, there's shots where you're getting Adam in, like, on frame right, and the parents in frame left, but then they change within the same shot. I'm forgetting. I should have watched that far tonight. But, you know,
there's
some
overlap
where
it looks like it had to have been, like, blue screen on top of split screen kind of stuff.
Yeah, but even, like, where I couldn't tell. Like, there's set shots where you can definitely tell. There's a few where it felt pretty seamless, which is fun and neat. And I could have used more of that.
Yeah, there were some where you could definitely 100% see the seam. Like,
oh, yeah.
There was one where you could see the tiny set that they had the baby on, and the parents were on the other side on the screen left, and the baby's on the screen right, and you could see the line straight down the middle where the paint and lighting on the wall is different, and they just did a hard split. It wasn't even like a soft mat or anything. So it was just like, wow, that's rough.
Actually, I think my favorite of the various size gags that was visible was the door gag where the baby tore the door off and comes running out. There's an angle looking with the regular baby in a small set where there's a prop miniature Rick Moranis attached to the door that the baby is shaking.
Oh, really?
It's hilariously fake looking.
It's
and
so bad. It's just a little ragdoll.
It just made me laugh so much looking at that. There's like two shots of it, but it's just like, oh, that is a very half-assed Rick Moranis duct taped to a door.
But there is a good shot, I would say, of over Rick Moranis' shoulder of him holding the door between him and Adam, who's facing the camera, and he's shaking the door. Adam's shaking the door in Rick Moranis' hands. And I wonder how they set that shot up, because that just seems really rough to do, because you're actually using both of those photographic elements. And
I didn't even bother to look and see if there's a Cinefix for this. I doubt there's a Cinefix.
Oh, no, there is. It's $20, so I'm not buying it, but there is a Cinefix for it.
What else is in that? Is in that issue?
I think Death Becomes Her, but for some reason...
We all know how they did all that, so...
Yeah, yeah. For some reason, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid got the cover, I don't know why that would be, but this is also interesting because this is Buena Vista Disney itself doing the effects, in addition to CIS Hollywood and another studio I can't think of. But Buena Vista's...
Wait, how long was that a thing?
Very briefly, because they didn't actually have the ability to do effects for a while in the 80s. I think after they started like... losing people and winding things down after things like the black hole and stuff like that, just like all these like optical, you know, compositing tricks and stuff that they were doing at the time that were neat and ornate and elaborate and kind of unnecessary and not with the times, and then they tried to spin that back up again, and they did this and I think a couple other things, and then it didn't exist anymore afterwards. And CIS Hollywood.
Yeah, most people realize. Most people who start a VFX house realize pretty quickly that they don't want to do that for very long, and they stop.
Yeah, because you're not ILM, so nobody wants to work with you for or trust you or anything, and then and they also don't want to pay you because you're not ILM, and then you go out of business, and then ILM stays business.
Some people don't even want to pay ILM.
Yeah.
I'm scrolling through.
Disney doesn't even want to pay ILM.
No, Disney doesn't pay. I found the hard mat you're talking about, at least in one of these shots at the door. I'm looking for...
I was just about to see if I could screenshot in the Disney Plus app. Have we tried that? Is that blocked?
I haven't yet. I'm assuming that they will fry my computer first. Oh, you're right. That over, Joe, of on Rick Moranis over Adam's shoulder... is really convincing, and oh my god, that is not Rick Moranis. Holy crap.
Oh, found the doll?
Wait, but it is Rick Moranis, though. My wife is coming over to see this, too. Hang on. I lost it.
Are you just scrubbing through the movie right now?
Well, I do this around 10:30 on every Tuesday.
Just scrub through Disney Plus movies?
Just this movie. The over on Rick Moranis, and then it looks like prop Rick Moranis, but then you get a profile of his face and it looks real. I don't know what to believe, guys.
There's definitely a prop Rick Moranis in there.
His arms look proppy, but that's a production term.
But I mean, I think it's actually kind of a testament to the work that they were doing that they were able to pull off some of these things in a way that we can't, you know, immediately discern what was done.
We just know it doesn't work.
Well, I mean, no, but some...
No, I know what you mean.
It works in very short shots, which is what they did, which was very helpful of them.
Some of them work better than others, and some of them are, like, not good at all.
Are they not good on, in 1990, whatever, like, terms, or, like... This is where I feel unable to judge, even though I know I could just compare it to Back to the Future, but...
Oh, like, it's a black screen. Damn it. I found the prop Rick Moranis. He's at like 33 minutes and 31 seconds or something.
Is it behind him?
Yeah, you're behind. You're looking at his back.
Yeah, but look at his face. Yeah, look at his face. He goes profile and it looks like it.
It looks like a robot chicken doll or something.
Yeah, but so does Rick Moranis. No, he doesn't. The shot that I can't figure out that I'm going to watch right now and try to figure out is where they're running and completely around the fireplace. Oh, the mat's just it's a traveling mat. Mm-hmm. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, no, but there's a mix of things in here, and some of it was, I think, good for the time period that this was done, because this was released in 1992. So you still have optical going on. It's, you know, it convincingly gets you through this story, such as it is. I don't think the effects are the thing that distract you from the story as much as it is the story that distracts you from the story, the writing itself. But which I usually, you know, use that as a measuring stick for how good or bad something is. It's like, would I really care if this was, you know, done better? And it's like, no, not really. I don't think it would sold it in a more
convincing
way.
I'm watching this, and I still hold strong that, like, this could be a really great movie if the fact that this baby is like, just the whole thing, like, if they had just dug deeper into this whole Nick feeling upstaged by his baby brother ruining his life, and just made that the thing the movie was about, this could have actually been a very fun, touching movie. And it wasn't, and so I'm mad.
you didn't pick put up this on one on all day, every day, like you did the other one.
No, I'm pretty sure we did. Because I like Joe, I remember this one better than I remembered Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Maybe because it's fresher, or I don't know.
I did not remember most of it, but by the time they were getting to Vegas, I was like, oh, right, the mom gets big. Like, that's the obvious solution here. So, of course, that's what they did. Oh my God, this Miranda doll looks so bad. I have to take pictures of my monitor right here because...
Sorry. You're right. It is bad. It is Robot Chicken. You said it very accurately. We haven't talked about the probably the cringiest thing in this movie to me. The if you blink and you'll still definitely see it. Lost Ark of the Covenant joke in the warehouse.
Mm. Yes,
I blinked.
That makes me want to die. It's a long shot on her standing there. He's like, I think I found it. And then it just holds on her while he's like, see if you can find a forklift. And then she still keeps standing there. And over her shoulder, God, I wish we could screenshot. I'm just going to take a picture of my screen.
Old fashioned. That's what I just did. Although one of the photos disappeared somehow.
Disney Plus.
God, wizards.
Yeah. They're all up in your biz. I did
That's
not
the tagline Disney Plus all up in your biz.
I did not notice the Ark gag.
Apparently
it's about
I
as good
either.
As the Ark gag in King. It's about as great as the Ark gag in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I don't know. That one had a music cue and lingered for a really long time directly on the box. So
I think it also had like a Spielberg slow push in on it or something.
Yeah, yeah. That was uncalled for. Yeah. Okay. Top secret government box.
It literally says Ark. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. See, now you know why I'm mad. Now you know why I hate this movie.
now we know why this movie is dead to you.
Yeah. Let's just roughly say that the accident that occurs that makes the baby big is in the big lab that Moranis is not supposed to have access to. The baby does not immediately get big because of the sort of delayed method. His solution for keeping things from exploding, from growing too fast, is sort of diffuse it with a Coke bottle, and that blows up everything. And then two nitwit scientists figure out very slowly, until John Shea walks over and hits the show me the whole image button. That
it turns off the region of interest on the screen.
Yeah.
There's a VFX joke for three people.
I don't know what they were thinking with this as like a big tense story moment of a thing with three eyes and a metal and human skeleton. But anyway, they find out that it's Moranis's kid. And so he's going to go over there. The kid is already huge, running around, running amok. The babysitter arrives because Nick and his dad were going to go to the movies to have some father-son bonding time because there was something he wanted to see at the Desert Seven. I've never, under any...
That's where you bond, is at the movies. You sit in the movie and stare at a screen, and you walk out having bonded and being closer to each other. I'm kind of ripping apart an old pastime of fathers and sons.
I was going to make a very inappropriate diner joke, but I won't do that.
Okay.
And he didn't. He didn't.
I don't want to ruin father-son time for you. I just
stopped this podcast. I put the brakes on hard, and now it is halted. I will hand it back off to you to bring back. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I mean, I'm just more taken aback by the fact that he would specify that there's something to see at the Desert Seven, not necessarily like there's a movie that I want to see. I've never associated a theater with the primary activity of the movie going experience.
That proves that they're there. That, you know, proves that they're in Las Vegas and native to and understand what things are called.
Yeah.
Also, but it is funny that he doesn't say the movie title. He's like, oh, there is a film, a flick that I'd love to catch at the old Cineplex.
Yeah.
The old Desert Seven.
Yeah.
Guys, you're still letting me talk. It's really good. It's really better if you start.
But they because they had set this whole thing up with the babysitter arriving, the babysitter Nick has a crush on, although Rick Moranis doesn't know that when he is arranging for the babysitter to come, so hilarious tension from answering the door. And the babysitter's there, and she's very insistent on getting her $2.50 an hour for 3 hours, which is, you know, bless her for being this motivated, I guess, but it's not worth it. This is where you get a really cringy scene of her fainting. She's the second person to faint in this movie. The mother had fainted previously before the mother and Rick went off to go to the storage facility and left Nick and Adam by themselves. So
it's just what women do, Joe. They faint.
Yeah, it's all they're really good at is fainting. And then you had the third faint that Seth had already mentioned earlier, where what's her face faints into the pool. So we just got three women fainting in this movie, which is unfortunate. But she comes to and she's bound and gagged to a chair, which is exactly how you want your children's movie to go.
Should have had that birds and the bees talk sooner. That's not appropriate without consent.
No. I mean, it's not even like a whole, you know, put the lotion on the skin basket thing going on here. But anyway.
Well, I have a question. I've never tied up and gagged a person. I swear.
Where's this going?
Can you really not scream when you just have a bandana over your mouth? Does it really stop you from projecting your voice?
I think it muffles it if you do yell. But
let's try it. Everyone get a bandana. And
everyone at home, let's participate.
Yeah.
So send us Twitter videos of yourself screaming.
If you can hear us.
Bandana.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you do get kidnapped, just give it a try. I mean, what do you have to lose?
Nothing.
Yeah. But it's the old, you know, very old cliche of don't scream. If I take this off, you take it off. They scream. Then you put it back on again.
I really now want to make a movie where the person just screams anyway because it's just a bandana over their mouth. Like, if I take this off, don't scream.
And then they just start screaming the entire time.
Yeah, exactly.
I said, if you don't scream, I'll take the bandana. All right.
And
fine,
it's
whatever.
Just both of them screaming over each other and everyone outside hearing it and calling the police.
Yeah. Including your dog barking at them the whole time.
I know.
What kind of dog do you have?
A golden doodle because it's hypoallergenic and my son is allergic too, and it's the least weird looking hypoallergenic dog, and she's adorable. Her name is Lorraine Baines McDoug.
Oh my gosh,
I'm on brand in everything I do.
Yeah, so you gotta have a cohesive system when you're going out, a marketing campaign, so to speak.
And that's all my life is one giant marketing campaign. For what? God, I don't know. But I drink a lot to find out.
You're preparing. You don't know for what, but you're preparing.
Exactly. That's what I tell my kids when I'm drinking during the day. I'm preparing. I don't know for what. It's got dark and weird.
Daddy's getting ready for his job.
But anyway, back to tying up and gagging the babysitter.
Yeah, oh, so that's also weird because he has the knowledge to do that. That it's just like, oh, yeah. Time to.
Well, he saw Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Tie up and gag her. Yeah,
he's seen one too many movies. That's for sure. He doesn't need to be going to the Cineplex anymore.
No. But they eventually settle on this whole explanation of, you know, my dad shrank us, blah, 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 recap first movie sort of, kind of, omit a couple things. And meanwhile, Zelensky, they find the previous shrink ray from the last movie, which is in the storage facility, and they put it inside of his van, and he starts arc welding it while she's driving like a maniac through Las Vegas, and decides to take a shortcut by driving through desert, which I think is probably a great way to get a flat tire, but I'm not an expert on that, because
or hit a landmine, right?
from the big land Vegas war that we had.
Look, if they're keeping the Ark of the Covenant in that warehouse, I guarantee you there's landmines nearby.
Yeah, but there is a moment where they decide to test the shrink ray, they zap two highway patrol officers who are pursuing them for driving through the desert, and so the highway patrol officers get very tiny, but the little camera sight thing on the shrink ray gun doesn't lose sight of them, which is nice, and then they get splashed with some mud, and then they get unshrunk, and they still have the mud on them, and there's just a little joke about this being out of their jurisdiction, which is, you know, kind of sort of funny. Question mark?
Science is in all of our jurisdictions. That's what I'll say to that. But also, they're... You're welcome. There's your title.
You don't give them an inch on this movie, will you?
No. It's a weird choice. It's a weird hill for me to die on. But I've already started losing oxygen, so I really have no reason to
stop.
You're really
going to take those cops to task for you know, failing to do their civic duty.
Disrespecting science. Here's the thing. And this is not actually like a quibble with the film. Quibble? Quarrel? Whichever Hogwarts professor you want. It was not a... I don't have a problem with this. But that shrink ray really knows, like, what accessories to shrink with the cops. Like, it's like okay, so I'm a targeted stream of energy. I'm going to go ahead and grab both these cops. I'm going to grab their hats and clothes and everything with them too. And their motorcycles, I assume you want as well. I'm going to grab those too. I'm going to assume you don't want the cars in the back behind them. You don't want any of the asphalt or pavement around them, or any of these bushes over here. Like, these are the things you want. So I'm going to grab these. It's a very, well-honed, shrink ray, right? Like,
It's got a pretty efficient targeting system. We don't have any particular evidence that the asphalt didn't shrink underneath them, because we wouldn't have seen that, except maybe in some potholes when they grew larger again.
But it's sort of how the ray worked in the previous movie, when they're shrinking and growing Matt Frewer on top of that, like, whatever it was that he was sitting on. For some reason, that was not selected, but he was...
And his pants were.
Yeah, and they could put, you know.
Just the pants.
Well, I mean, it's like, I feel like that is an opportunity then to, like, basically decide, well, the shrink ray grabbed me and my shirt, but really nothing else. So it's like I talked about last time, that hat being a little bit too big. Like, I want to go down that road to that Cronenberg film. Like, I kind of want this thing to be a little more...
The Fly?
look, basically what you're hearing me do here is trying to redirect this film, or direct...
that's literally what we do on this podcast. But you are going down the Cronenberg path, because this movie sets you up perfectly for it with the fact that when you make somebody larger, they don't stop getting larger. Anytime they get closer to electromagnetic frequencies, it happens again. So it's like continuing to devolve into a fly.
Why doesn't it happen in Vegas? When he picks up the freaking guitar.
Well, they do.
You guys both sprung straight into action.
I had a stupid answer, but Joe, go ahead.
Well, there's some weak dialogue that happens where they say he's
where, when,
right as he's getting into Vegas, they're like, oh, he's grown by double his size and the amount of time that he's been here, and it's like, is this pocket we're in getting smaller? Or are we getting smaller? Is this we're in getting bigger? And they're like, oh, Adam's growing because of the electromagnetic stuff from the thing. But there's no animated optical electrical stuff happening like there were in the previous instances.
So those lines are actually there in that third act?
Yeah, it's right as they're getting into Vegas. And
then that was a note. That was definitely a note, and they addressed it with some ADR.
It doesn't really make it good that they did that. But as you said, there is literally nothing that happens when he picks up the guitar. For a second, I was like, oh, well, he picks up the guitar and it severs the thing, and so the light goes off, and so then he's not exposed to the electromagnetic field, but that's not the case.
It stays lit up.
Yeah, it's
that is a battery-operated Hard Rock Cafe sign.
Well, for some reason, it has a lot of slack between it and the ground. I'm not sure what the purpose of that is when you're setting up your enormous neon guitar sign. It's just like, oh yeah, sure, let's make sure we can move it around a little, I suppose. But it has that wire still running down into the ground for the only reason is to keep it lit. It's very weird, but
the only reason is to keep it lit. That's right, Joe.
Sounds very Hard Rock. But the other instances where he grows, it's all very instantaneous and very literal with a connection of some electrical animated stuff, you know, connecting
to
him.
Yeah, you got some Ghostbusters lines that come out and caress him.
Yeah, and so he changes size drastically immediately and with an on-screen optical effect, but that doesn't happen this time that they use dialogue for it, basically. And I don't know why, but that was at least what they tried to explain with that dialogue.
Well, it feels like you get the kid around Vegas. I would say there's probably, this is going to be interesting to about two people, so both of you buckle up. I feel like, you had me on this podcast, you knew what you were getting. I feel like it was one or two things. It was one of two things. It was written in the script originally, and was either lazily, not lazy, but it was either lost amidst what I imagine was like, what feels like it was like one draft of one rewrite, or it was never there, and it was hoped to be a you know, Hitchcock sandwich thing. You know what I'm referring to when I refer to the Hitchcock sandwich, which is the title of the episode now?
I don't know the Hitchcock sandwich.
The Hitchcock sandwich.
Is that the MacGuffin?
No. Actually, Hitchcock sandwich, it refers to a quote Hitchcock said one time that, like, if you, about movie logic, and basically it's like the, all that matters to him is that the, like, the husband and wife make it home, to when they're making it, and it's not until they are at home making a sandwich that they look up and go, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
That didn't make a whole lot of sense.
I've heard that quote before. But I still think it should be a McDonald's special called the MacGuffin.
The MacGuffin and the Hitchcock sandwich.
I've heard that referred to as fridge logic.
Oh, that's actually what it is.
okay.
Yes.
The Hitchcock sandwich is pretty good too.
I mean, exactly. I like that better. It's like the 10 rules of Jack Sparrow, whatever the hell I said that one time.
8 degrees of. I can't remember what it is either. I don't remember anything.
That's how good my analogies are. There's someone else's analogies that I made worse. It felt like they probably just thought it was cool to have him be in Vegas and attacking things and hoped that you wouldn't notice. And inevitably someone did notice and gave notes, whether it be in a test screening or in a or an actual studio note, and then they were out of money, so they added some of that dialogue and with, is this pocket getting bigger or smaller? Which I can't forget to address. My wife passed me this note. Don't forget about how the car in the pocket could have crushed them, because it's 100% true. That car is falling all over the place while they're like, oh no, we are not dying horribly underneath this vehicle.
Yeah,
just had to throw that in.
Yeah, no, and there's also some other perilous things with the car when the enormous mother hugs the enormous baby and theoretically could have crushed him, and then when they also shrink down, more hugging. And they lose the car with them in it, and it had fallen out of the pocket because there's a hole in the pocket now. So that car,
in a great distance.
Yeah, that car fell what would be the equivalent of like 80 feet, I guess, sort of, by little kid size, but tiny car sized. I'm not really sure. The scale of that's a little weird to think about. But yeah, they would have fallen.
But it was enough. It was enough to get Carrie Russell moving and ready to go. Because at the end of that movie, at the end of this movie, she is like weirdly suddenly attracted to Nick because she just fell a fatal distance in a car with him. And
well, it's the same thing. You go through a traumatic experience with somebody, you come out the other side bonded in some weird way.
She's no longer concerned about getting her $18.
Oh, she knows she's getting it one way or another.
Yeah, well,
that's true.
What's really weird, though, is she specifically references Nick rescuing her. But she,
when did that happen?
When she opened the car door, she's like, I can't be in the car. I can't be in here anymore. And she like opens the car door that like falls out. She's like dangling by the edge of the door on the passenger side. And Nick reaches over and pulls her back in, and then they close the door, and then the figurine falls over in the back, and then they fall off the leg.
Oh, that heroic moment.
Yeah, and then Adam scoops up the car and puts the car in his pocket. So that
After swinging them around at like 20 G's, right?
Man, terrifying. But this you know, they have the shrink ray. They're doing their plan to go shrink the baby back, but the baby has been abducted because of the interference of John Shea, and the baby is seized by the marshals and being taken in an enormous truck that they had on hand, it was a playpen. Oh no, playpens don't work.
They've got a lot of pull with the government in a very weird way,
very strange way. Because there also was the involvement of the Nevada militia at one point,
do you think there was a mafia aspect to the script at some point? Because Las Vegas.
I guess. I mean, there is, of course, the Ark of the Covenant inside of their secure storage facility, so there is some government arrangement, of course, because they wouldn't just let anybody store that. But
no, just a very not heavily guarded.
They had the little wooden balsa wood arm thing that comes down and keeps the cars from going in and out.
You're right. State of the art balsa wood.
Yeah, but they go underneath the high tension power lines. The baby gets bigger. The baby escapes, leaves behind Big Bunny, and goes towards Vegas, and they need to try to derail him and get him to hold still. But because he's bigger now, they need him to hold still for a long period of time for the ray to work.
They say, and it doesn't actually happen later.
No, because what they really need to do is just like shrink him in increments. And if he can't hold still, just shrink him a little bit every single time. Just keep zapping him. But they got to do it all in one go, I guess. I don't know how you do the math on that one, but sure, just figure that one out on the back of a napkin Yeah, but like, how do you guess the amount of just how do you guess the baby's height? how do you measure the baby's height to shrink the baby to be the baby's original size all in one go?
Mm. I would probably go based on the length of the foot proportionally to the height, because that's something they could measure on the ground.
But did they?
Well, we don't know. We don't know that they didn't.
There's also a version of this movie where the wife just explodes because he didn't get to test it on anything before he blew her up.
She gave that stirring speech about how she believes in him, and she let him do all this, you know, crazy stuff, and now she's got her crazy idea, so he's got to do it. And
Joe, that means nothing to science. Science cannot hear your cries for help. Science cannot hear your pleas for emotion. Science does what it wants coldly. Sorry.
Science doesn't care how much you love your giant baby. Showing.
No, it doesn't.
I just don't think that's a theme of the honey eye universe.
What is the theme? What is the theme of the honey I blew up the big baby?
You mean the specific movie or this franchise?
No, the movie.
Okay, the movie is believe in yourself. You can do anything you set your mind to, and don't be full of doubts. Also, take care of your children.
Okay, every movie gets that theme. Just It just, it's the default. Like, they get it free, like, with the package. Now, what what is this film uniquely? That's my thing. Like, oh, I've already said it. No, but it,
it's a, I think this is the cynical production of it, is that it doesn't need to, it doesn't need to espouse anything grand about the world, because it's a 90s kids movie. So it's like, hey, we're a 90s kids movie. We're going to do a 90s kids movie thing.
I know.
We hired the guy who directed Grease,
I feel like...
and White Fang, and we've got him on board, and he's gonna just direct the baby,
and Blue Lagoon, I believe, as well, which mm-hmm. is clearly preparing him for this role.
I mean, if you look at the mom, you've got a little bit of protect your family at all costs kind of thing. Like, she's willing to risk being exploded to get bigger to save the baby and to swat the helicopter out of the sky, but that's about it.
It's just a shame that we're going to have to wait a whole 6 months for them to reboot this. And that was a joke. I don't know how long we're going to have to wait. But we have to wait for them to reboot this and show us what the modern-day version of this. Because arguably, you know, you said it yourself, Joe, like a 90s family movie wasn't trying to be anything more than it was. This is a pre-Pixar period. And yes, they still don't overall, but... I look at this movie, and even more than Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I feel like this is such a stupid concept, but it's such a, it has a lot of inherent, like, obvious jokes, like, to it. It's a much more high, I feel like, not higher, not much more high concept, but it lends itself to, it's much broader, than Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, arguably, just the idea of having a baby become a giant monster movie with a giant baby. I feel like this one is easier to Lord and Millerize than Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And I think that's why I watch this, and it's like a shame, because I'm like, you know, there's a surprisingly good version of this to be made, I think. Now,
part of the problem is, sorry, go ahead.
You just got to do it after the Josh Gad one is done. You can be like, hey.
That's what I'm saying. We got to wait a whole 6 months.
Mm. Yeah.
You see the Home Alone news today, too, because they're now rebooting Home Alone as well for Disney Plus.
But in the spirit of Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, it wasn't actually going to be a Home Alone movie. They just decided it aligned, and they put it in the Home Alone-iverse. But it is just another script where the couple with what's-his-face from Twitter and... Ellie Kemper, that they're a couple, and the kid takes some valuable thing, and they're trying to get it back from the kid. So it's not Home Alone, like, rebooted from the, you know, John Hughes
that's
movie
Home Alone 3,
script,
isn't it?
What?
I think that's Home Alone 3. The kid has some valuable thing, and the criminals are trying to get it back.
No, the house or something has something valuable in it, and they're specifically targeted by these criminals, but the...
Oh, like Panic Room.
Yeah.
That's basically what Home Alone
is. I don't really remember the details of it. It was a long time since I've seen it. I can't believe Carrie Ann Moss is in it. I think that's the thing that sticks out in my mind the most every time I think about that movie. But...
How often do you think about that movie?
Just every so often when somebody mentions Home Alone 3, or, like, would have been nice if they did a sequel to Home Alone 2, and it's like, oh, yeah, they did that thing. And then there was Home Alone 4, and that was a directed... video
and
thing?
A Home Alone 5.
Oh god,
yeah, Home Alone. It was called like the Christmas Caper or something like that. I guess the kid steals from someone else. I hope that's what it's about. I hope it's about this time the kid is the robber and adults are keeping the kid out.
He's framing two people that are sent to prison and they have to break out and clear their names.
Yeah, but so this one, like, according to the THR thing that I read, it's repurposed. They basically took a script that was supposed to be for something else, and they're like, hey, what if we just slap Home Alone on it?
You know, they did that for Die Hard with a Vengeance. They slapped Home Alone on it. No, it was a spec script called Simon Says. You guys probably know this.
Yeah, Dan has explained it to me many times because he's bitter about it. Yeah.
Everyone insists that Die Hard 3 is the best Die Hard movie, and they are wrong.
What? Who is everyone? What? Get these people out of your life. Come live with me.
Oh, I've been waiting for you to invite me to do that for so long. Oh, I'll be right there.
Oh, that's garbage. It's the best Die Hard sequel. It is not the best Die Hard movie. Who the
I don't
hell
even know if I would say
life,
it's the best sequel
that.
Because well there's something endearing about the absurd 80s airport stuff with the sweaters and all of that. So
oh, 2 feels like the most Die Hard yeah. sequel.
Yeah. Well, you get William Sadler's butt too. So
William Sadler's butt. Yeah.
Thank God.
Die Hard 3 feels a lot like Mission Impossible 3. It gets a little gritty, gets a little green, and it's fine. But like you know, let's keep it in its place, I suppose.
On first viewing, 3 is really a lot of fun. I'm letting us go all over the place here. So
no,
we're supposed to talk about Honey, I Blew the Kiss.
I think it's relevant to the topic of like. Sequels and remaking things and repurposing things and just like slapping
repurposing specs into yeah.
Okay.
Did you know that? Have you guys talked about Tears of the Sun and its relation to Die Hard?
No. Is that Sun like the star or Sun like
Tears
sun?
Of the Sun like the star? That was the I don't think it was Vietnam. It was the war movie like that. Bruce Willis was in that was
oh that one yeah.
That was. From what I believe, Bruce Willis was trying to originally wanted it as a Die Hard sequel. That script, Tears of the Sun, was going to be repurposed into a Die Hard sequel. I don't remember the timeline or where I read it. You know, I want to say there is a book. I may have read it in. There's a book about Hollywood bombs. I wish I remembered the title. Like Hollywood bombs, like about, you know, box office disasters. Bonfire of the Vanities gets a chapter, which has its own book, which is wonderful. But that gets a chapter. Something else Bruce Willis is in, like Hudson Hawk or something.
Oh, I like Hudson Hawk. It's so cheesy.
And they talk about... Is Hudson Hawk the right one I'm thinking of? Like, would that qualify for a chapter in that book?
Probably. I only know it from seeing it on terribly syndicated television channels on cable, so it probably did not do well. It's incredibly cheesy.
The only two people I know that like it are both named Dan.
Oh, who's the other one?
Dan Morin.
Oh, okay, great.
It's one of his like favorite movies is Hudson Hawk.
I would not say it's a favorite movie. It's absurd and ridiculous, but it's amusing in a very, like, they let Bruce Willis do this kind of way.
I've never seen it, so I kind of like the mental image of just some movie existing that you and Dan Moore both like that I can't figure out what it would be about that has Bruce Willis as its star.
We'll do that next.
No.
But I have some questions with regard to repurposed sequel scripts and things like that, and particularly this one here for Seth because he hates this movie so much. Do you think the fact that our primary character who is affected by, you know, the laser in this movie being a baby that is not particularly coherent or making their own decisions, whereas in the first movie it was young children who had goals and lives and wanted to do things and were able to voice those opinions. Did the fact that it was a baby make a difference in the success of this story for you?
Listen, I was reading the Tears of the Sun Wikipedia page, so I missed everything you just said.
Are you with me now, or are you still reading Wikipedia?
I only get to use that excuse once, and I just used it.
The fact that it was a baby and not a young sort of almost teenager who could speak and have opinions and want things in life. Did that make this movie less successful because it was just a giant baby wandering around bumping into things?
Can you imagine what the movie would have been if it were a teenager wandering around like, hey, I'm huge. What am I going to do about this?
It would have been less of like a monster movie chaos story of just like smashing things and, oh God, we have to head this off. The kid would have just been like, oh my God, please shrink me. This is so embarrassing. Everyone can see me. And like, it would have been over a lot quicker.
Yeah, then you
the
get that.
Problems.
Then you get the overt teenage, like high school movie themes of like, oh, I'm all pimply, and oh, I'm like, no one look at me. Oh shit! Now no one can do anything but look at me because I'm huge. That sounds bad. Yeah. That sounds like a very bad movie.
Yes, but having characters that like have, you know, a mind of their own rather than just a baby that kind of bounces off stuff and breaks stuff and causes havoc. Would that have made this a more successful movie? Or is the fact that it was a baby kind of one of the reasons that this couldn't really have any theme that worked as a movie?
No, it could have a theme. I've already talked about it. Like, they already point toward it with like Nick being frustrated with his baby brother, like, and the fact is like this baby was not in the first one, and so this baby is a new addition to this family from the audience's point of view, and already it kind of feels like it's Nick. Like Nick seems to have just met this baby at the beginning of this film, and so I feel like there are already thematic opportunities that they kind of touched on but didn't fully get there with, like, this baby is invading this, like, this family's home and, like, and messing up all of Nick's plans, like, when it's before it even becomes a giant baby, when it's just a regular sized baby. So it becoming a giant baby just escalates that and blows it up to high concept proportions, and it's not really mined at all. The idea that, like, when you have a kid, especially a kid this age, every amount of control you have in your life is completely an illusion that you have managed to grasp onto for dear life. And I feel like like the baby becoming a monster size, an unmanageable, monstrous, destructive size, you have opportunities that affects that, enlarges a regular everyday emotion for every one of these characters and their roles in the family. Mm. For the mom, for the dad, for the siblings, it has an equal, parallel to, and it has a parallel thematic resonance for their roles in the family and with the baby at regular size.
So you're looking for some sort of acceptance, and rather than the frustration that they had at the beginning of the movie, they come to understand the baby's place in the family and love the baby despite the fact that he's smashing everything. And maybe Nick, like, says, here, have fun, go play with the guitar, I don't care that much, I have a girlfriend now, or something. Like, I don't know what sort of resolution what would resolution have looked like.
The acceptance of lack of control. It's almost like at Jurassic Park, like theme. The idea of, like, I mean, having kids is a lot like having a park filled with dinosaurs. Every amount of control, like I said, every amount of control you have, every little bit of control is very much an illusion of control. Having children is very much, surrendering yourself to the chaos of nature. It really is about, like, realizing that, one, it's like it's not just about you, and that you can't control everything, and allowing your life to be messy and unpredictable and chaotic, and but, like, understanding what you traded all of that in for, and none of that's here. And I feel like that's a lot of stuff that people, even without kids, can understand and relate to.
Well, in that vein, it sounds like maybe they leaned too heavy on Nick as a main character, because that sounds like a perspective from a parent. I mean, would you expect that same sort of feeling from a sibling? Like,
I mean, I think it would be second. Like, I think you would see it through the perspective of the sibling, because the fact that we already know this sibling and like them from the first movie. I'm saying, like we, an audience, paid a lot of money to see this movie over and over again, and therefore we are assuming we like both Nick and Amy.
Oh, so okay. So I think I'm with you now. So maybe Nick finally opens his eyes to see why his parents at the end of the movie aren't livid with the baby smashing all this stuff. They love the baby in spite of the fact that it is a terror. And Nick can kind of take some cues from that and say, like, okay, this is, we're family. Like, this is what we do, and this is how it's going to be. And then he can sort of take part.
Yeah. I think you even get Nick stuck with the baby for a period of, Nick and Amy stuck with the baby for a period of time. They are both babysitting the baby, and the parents come into it around the midpoint. They become aware of the situation around the midpoint. And it's interesting if Nick is the one who accidentally does it.
Right. He's the one who resents, like, the baby. He should be the one who begins to overcome his resentment and sort of solve the problem.
Exactly. And meanwhile, you have something about the parents' lives that the baby is screwing up. Maybe Wayne is actually, you get rid of John Shea, and you have Wayne screwing up at his job literally because he has a two-year-old. By that point, you've developed some kind of routine in your life. But and I feel like if there's some way that having this third kid that they probably weren't planning on...
Maybe the two-year-old colored on some of his math homework and that screwed up his experiment. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, something. It's like, I feel like, you get where I'm going with this, though, is that, like, this baby has a way to, before it even blows up, before it even explodes, to be a source of inconvenience and destruction to specific plans of each of these characters. And then... and then you play that out to like its high concept.
The baby
place.
The baby is does actually like is a source of destruction prior to being zapped. Like the phone line being removed when Nick was on his call, and messing up the guitar and other things of that nature. But there's no resolution of like.
Exactly.
Him coming to understand or anything, because the Nick's story just goes into I'm going to have a girl that I like for the rest of this movie, and everything that I do is going to be about liking this girl, and
yeah,
that's why we end with Rick Moranis with a giant magnifying glass watching what might be the precursor to some sex happening in a tiny car.
No.
On a sound stage.
I refuse to believe that, but it is very uncomfortable the way the dad's like, I'm going to give him some time.
Yeah.
He was waving him away. The fact that he knows his dad's right there, I think it's not going very far. But since we were talking about Home Alone earlier, you know, that's probably a good example of the way Kevin is dealing with, like, his family members, and he like shoves Buzz and knocks the milk over, and that's why his ticket gets thrown away. That's a place where like his chaos actually sort of moves the plot forward in a way, other than the family just sort of like rolling their eyes at him. And it could have done something like that here.
Yeah, you're right. The baby doesn't have any direct, like, the baby gets up and wanders over to get Big Bunny, and then therefore coincidentally gets zapped. He doesn't get zapped because of anybody's flawed decision. You know, like Buzz and Woody get lost because Woody tries to knock him behind the shelf. Like a very unhealthy choice. It's like Adam should get zapped because Nick tries to knock him behind the shelf. Like he should get zapped because of some unhealthy choice he does.
Yeah, it's not that they just were both super duper engrossed in this weird experiment on a Saturday.
So engrossed. And on this experiment, by the way, in which they're staring at a camera feed of what they're zapping, we haven't talked about those dumbass scientists who think they've discovered a mutant.
Well, we briefly touched on them.
Did we?
You may have dipped out.
My brother got
Yeah,
they're
nitwits. And John Shea just comes over and pushes the button where it actually loads the whole image.
Sorry, I missed it. Dang it. Yeah. That was my favorite part of the movie.
Well, now we ruined it for you, so what else you got?
Yeah. What's your second favorite part of the movie? Other than rewriting the entire
movie
Wayne
from
top to bottom.
The Wayne Newton joke?
Well, I think we did a lot of good work here solving the movie's problems, and now it is ready to go into its next draft before we go into production.
No, let's just shoot it.
Just shoot it?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt anyone else. We can just fix it in post. Right, Joe?
It always comes back to Joe fixing it in post.
Yeah.
No, you write the movie three times. You write it when you write the script. You write it when you write the second draft of the script. You write it when you write the third draft of the script. Then you also write it again when you shoot the film, and also again while you're still shooting the film.
That's
then
a
you
Hitchcock
write it again
sandwich.
When you edit it, exactly. Then you write it again when you edit it. It's a multi-layered sandwich. Then you write it again when the movie is coming out in a week, and then
don't forget the first
you
test
write it
screening.
Again. Sorry, first test screening. Then you write it again when you get tired of it and bored with it. That one you rewrite with visual effects. Now that you have a team that can replace anything for you, you rewrite it then. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Then you rewrite it like, you know, 20 years later when you're rich and have access to technology. Guys, remember when I told you should just start talking and not?
Yeah, sure, sure. I was going to make a comment about how you sort of, you know, rewrite your legacy in the trades by just telling stories that may or may not have been true, but you know.
Yeah. They call that the Snyder sandwich.
Mm. Boom.
Snyder sandwich.
The Snyder cut. It's the Snyder cut. It's a certain kind of way you cut. It's
the Snyder cut. The Snyder cut of a sandwich.
It's a slice of meat.
It's like
it's
a roast
Snyder
beef sandwich, but it's really wet, and exactly. the bread is a little too small for the meat.
I like how we're starting now.
the Snyder suite of products.
No, we're a sandwich shop that's all filmmaker themed. Oh, like well. We have the Hitchcock sandwich, the Snyder cut.
Are we a Planet Hollywood all of a sudden?
No, isn't yes. this a King of Bruce Enthusiasm Willis? Episode?
It might have been. I didn't watch Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I watched that episode. He was mad that he got bumped off a menu for somebody else. I forget who it was. It was like a Ted Danson or something.
So it was like a celebrity sandwich thing. Yeah, exactly. Like everybody has a one named after them.
Well, for dessert, we can serve Tears of the Sundays.
Close your Wikipedia tab.
Yeah. Well, look, another dessert
so,
would be the...
By the way, it was an early subtitle for Live Free or Die Hard. It was called Live Free or Die Hard, Tears of the Sun.
No. Oh.
He filmed Live Free or Die Hard, supposedly. This is Wikipedia's like heavily like reductive and oversimplified explanation, but he filmed Live Free or Die Hard on the condition that he could use its subtitle for his SEALs war film, Tears of the Sun.
Okay.
Hmm. I don't buy it.
No.
Let's contact Bruce, see what he has to say for himself.
Yeah. And what kind of sandwich he envisions for himself.
That was Antoine Fuqua. That was it's Training Day, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and Finding Forrester, classic.
Is that the one with Connery?
Yeah, where he's like, "Now you've got it, dog," or whatever he says.
Where he's a grumpy old shut-in writer who wears his socks inside out.
Yep.
Great. He gets mad.
Well,
I'm taking us all over the map here in this episode.
I think we've reached the edge of the conclusion of the map. The map's done.
The edge of the Tears of the Sun.
Wait, have we talked about, like, real quick though, did you, when you first heard of the title Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, did you think that someone blew up a kid? Like, that a kid exploded?
Yes.
Like, it is a bad title.
Yeah, it is a terrible title. But at the same time, I'm not sure exactly what substitution I would make to retain.
Honey, I made the kid larger.
Honey, yeah, I enlarged right? the child.
don't quite work easily. I think.
Honey, I made the kid bigger than it once was, size wise.
Honey, with regard to the child, he is now larger. Oh God!
Honey, with regard to the child, that would be a good series.
With regard to the child,
that sounds like a poor translation back from another language that this movie was translated into.
That's what the TV show should have been called. Honey, with regard to the child. In regard to the child. Oh my God!
Oh,
well, on that note, in regard,
I'm sorry, I gotta laugh at that for about 30 more minutes.
Regard to the end, we've reached the end, and as we had said previously, Seth Worley is fun and great, and he is doing all of his stuff with plotdevices.co, and there's Thank stuff you. to go find and do, I guess. Well, shopping is doing.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, go shop. You can also follow him on the Twitter. He has some funny tweets every now and then, and then a lot of stuff about a company called Red Giant, where he will do little tiny videos of some particles exploding people and things on occasion.
I'm actually doing a Honey, I Shrunk the Kid tutorial that may or may not be out around the time that comes out.
It'll be out way before this podcast comes out. Yeah. We're very slow.
Okay. Well, it may not be because I'm taking my sweet time. Mm.
Well, we'll just see who takes the most of their sweet time now, won't we? But
we will
definitely follow Seth and do all that other good stuff and support his livelihood, being himself. Because it's good to do that.
He's going to need a few more extra bucks now that I'm moving in because
he's another mouth to feed.
I eat a lot of food. I'm raiding that fridge for my Hitchcock sandwich.